Welcome to the Speak Like a Leader podcast with John Bates.
Welcome to the show. With me today, I have a super special guest in my book. And, you know, it's one of the benefits of doing my own podcast is I get to choose the guests. And this is someone that I have known since he was born, and who is one of my best friends on earth, and someone who is not genetically dissimilar from me. And you're probably starting to guess, this is my brother, Mike Bates, who happens to be the CEO of Hot Wax Systems. And I just want to say, I take a little credit for his success. We'll tell you the story later, but he runs Hot Wax Systems, which is the number one implementer of an top-level Apache open source project called OFBiz, Open for Business. And it is a CRM, product management, inventory management, web, all that stuff. I'll let Mike tell you about it, but that's who's with me today is Mike Bates, my brother and the CEO of Hot Wax Systems and someone that I respect tremendously and love a lot. Mike, welcome.
Hey, thank you. I'm super stoked to be here. It's an honor.
Well, cool. So let's tell the story of why I get a slight assist credit here. It's just a minor assist, by the way. But it was a minor assist at the right time, right?
No, it was a huge shove, man. You get lots of credit. Like you were fundamentally instrumental in all that.
Well, tell us, I mean, Hot Wax Systems has been around for, geez, since the millennium or something or before.
Yeah, I founded it in 1997.
So so you have had a business since 1997. I've been through a whole bunch of them since 1997. You've got this long-running, very successful, awesome business. And it did all kind of start when I started working on the internet at Virtual Vegas, right?
Totally.
And I said, Mikey, dude, you know, come down and work with me. You got to check this internet thing out. It's going to be big.
Absolutely. I was studying in Monterey at the Monterey Institute, and my summer came up. It was time to figure out what I wanted to do for the summer after my first year there.
Uh-huh.
I was literally like, I was either going to go work on a fishing boat in Alaska, or I was going to go down to LA and check out this internet thing. And I, yeah, almost just a coin toss, but I was like, well, you know, this way I get to hang out with Johnny and check out LA. And by the way, I remember visiting you there when I was younger a few times, and it was always this magical place where I got my first skateboard and, you know, discovered hot chili peppers and Venice Beach. And
I saw someone shooting up heroin in our alley and asked me what that was. And I had to figure out how to explain it to little Mikey.
Oh my God. That image is seared into my brain.
Yeah.
So many good things too. I mean, cruising Venice Beach and meeting Harry Perry and eating takeout and seeing what it was like for you to be 26 or whatever you were. When I was 16, or it was even earlier, probably.
I think it was earlier, a little bit,
It was, anyway, really impactful, fun times that I remember going to visit my big brother. And so I think that's probably what tipped the scales. And I thought, well, let's go back and hang out with Johnny. And the internet thing was sort of secondary, probably.
Yeah.
Then when we got there, I worked on a DVD project. And it was kind of like, well, DVDs, internet, I don't know, you know, could go either method seems to make perfect sense. And I guess given the bandwidth and stuff. But that summer I learned how to, you know, I learned the basics of like client server architecture and how to do, how to, you know, what a web server was and how to TP files and a little Photoshop. And I learned HTML. So when I went back up to Monterey, I actually drove up there in the night and parked in front of the house where I was renting a room. And then I climbed in the back of my truck and slept. And at like, you know, 7:30 in the morning on a Sunday, I woke up and I saw the president of the school like zipping in his little convertible BMW to go grab something at his office. Guard. And so I grabbed some toothpaste and like smeared toothpaste in my mouth and climbed out of my truck and ran across the street. And I was like, Dr. Guard, it's Mike Bates. And I think he, you know, I was the youngest person there. And so I kind of had some strange celebrity status. It's a small school. Yeah. So he knew who I was. And I was like, hey, Dr. Guard, I just got back from LA and I've learned about this internet thing and the school totally needs a website. Do you think I could build the school's website? And he was like, yeah, some people have been talking about it. Go talk to this guy and that guy. So I went and found those people and we built the school's first website and created their like web services division in their IT department. And in fact, I like sat in a closet for 3 days straight and hand coded that whole website. So it was pretty epic. I was there worked all day. The people, everyone came back the second day and I had been there working all night. I mean, I had like a Mr. Coffee and that was that. And so I sat there and cranked and they came back the third day in the morning and they were like, you have to go home now. I had about finished and I went and climbed in bed and slept for like 12 hours. But yeah, that was that. And then once the site was built, I it became sort of a maintenance thing where we had to coordinate with all the different graduate programs and get their, you know, descriptive information and their whatever, all the stuff that goes with maintaining and supporting a site like that. And it was not that interesting to me to be like hustling around in a cubicle, you know? Yeah. So once the thing was built, I decided that I would just go be a consultant on my own. And everyone at that point was just the perfect break, you know?
Yeah.
And so everyone wanted to know about what was going on with the internet. And so I started, I charged like $50 an hour and I went out and just started building websites for anybody who wanted them, the DoubleTree Hotel and
right. All
these random kind of corporate scenes that I was previously super unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
And within like, 6 months, I want to say I was charging like $350 an hour. I remember I went to go up to Xilinx to talk with them about building some web stuff. And I went and got a new suit for my meeting. And I think the suit was more valuable than the truck I was driving up there. I'm like, "Money suit." I mean, I'm like 22. I have a pierced tongue and blue hair. And it was just a heyday. So, but I quickly kind of realized that I wasn't, you know, I was getting a lot of help from a lot of really talented, smart people. And it would be a graphic designer here, and it would be a systems administrator there, and it would be a DBA here. And I, you know, it was clear that I wasn't as good as any of these people at their specialties, right? I could do all things kind of poorly, but if I could grab the people who were really good at it and bring them together and we could work as a team, it was just an obvious choice. So made some really good friends, worked with some really talented people and started just, you know, the business model was pretty rough and tumble. It was just like, I'm going to go charge these guys 10 grand. Like I'll give you $2,000 if you do this and I'll give you $2,000 if you do that. Yeah. Keep the rest or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So in 1997, I finally worked with our dad to file a business entity and have an LLC and sort of formalize it a bit. And from that point, we were doing all manner of kind of mostly front-end web development, but we did have we built a transactional e-commerce system in the 90s, you know?
Well, I mean, and this is a lot of people who aren't familiar with that time. You couldn't just go to a web store and buy some functionality. You couldn't get an app for that. There wasn't WordPress plugins. Like anything you wanted like that, you had to hand code from the bottom up.
There wasn't even Google, dude.
Right. I mean, yeah. Everybody was Yahooing.
Yeah, exactly. With your Hotmail or whatever.
Right.
So, or yeah, there are a lot of those MySpace kind of thing. But so You're right. Was, you know, to build a system that performed functional e-commerce transactions was not common at all.
Yeah.
And so we were in e-commerce really early, and we were also doing all other kinds of web kind of front end oriented development, a lot of Flash, and you remember Flash?
Yeah, I totally.
That was actually really fun.
And yeah.
So, you know, whatever people needed, it was kind of a, well, if a new technology came out and they wanted it, we'll go grab it and figure it out and build something for them, you know?
Uh-huh.
It was really scrappy. So, but it was a blast, and we just,
you know, yeah, it was a wild, wild times.
Yeah. You would order your server from Penguin Computing or whatever, and it would show up, and then you would flash the BIOS yourself and install the OS, and then you'd drive up to the data center, and then you would slide it into the rack and see if you could telnet to it, and then you'd configure the HTTP directory and the whole thing. So yeah. It was really, really fun. And I learned a lot, met a lot of really good people who, you know, some of whom I'm still in touch with and working with today. So we got it kind of up and running, and we did that more or less, until about 2006,
uh-huh.
2007, we were again trying to build another framework for e-commerce.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the thing about e-commerce, we could talk about it more later, but it's, you know, it's complicated on the back end. And so, yeah. At that point, especially to find a good e-commerce system that had the backend functionality you actually need to, you know, track an order through its various states and process payment and deal with inventory was really pretty hard. You could go to ATG and pay $1 zillion or whatever.
Yeah.
There were good IBM ones floating around, but the license fees for those cost more than it cost us to build them from scratch. So
yeah.
So we were building another framework. And I've always loved open source, and that was just vital in those first days. The reason that I was able to have so much fun is because I could go grab a, you know, Ubuntu Linux or whatever, and everything I was working with for the most part, except like Photoshop, was open source, and so that was just baked into our ethos, kind of, you know, how we went at it. So. So in 2006, we were trying to build another framework, or we were strongly considering it. And then we found an open source framework called OFBiz. I think it was in the Apache incubator by then, or it was just about to. And now it's a top level project. But we found OFBiz, and we thought it was really cool. I credit this guy, Tim Rupert, for having the vision to see that. Then Tim and I went and found David and Andrew, David Jones and Andrew Zaneski, who created the framework. And we, like, you know, drove down to some small town in central Utah and met them.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up hiring them both as our CTO and CIO for a while. And we kind of went all in on this framework. So
yeah.
And about that time in 2007, we were working with a group of people in India. And that's another cool thing about open source is it's just like online and it's completely like meritocracy. So it doesn't matter really where somebody is. If they're valuable contributors and they're communicating well, you know, they can play ball. So we were looking at everybody that we were interacting with all over the world. And the biggest group that we found was a group in India, at a city called Indore, where we've been together. And it was kind of headed up by this guy, Anil Patel, who's a business partner in Hotwax still today.
Yep.
And so we worked with that team for about 6 months. And then we thought, well, we should just formalize this. So we kind of merged the operations and kind of subsumed that company and became one. And And so, yeah, there, like I say, at that point, it was about 12 people. We had really all the experts in the framework on staff or in our orbit. And so we initiated this sort of internal professional development program we call Hot Wax University.
Taught there.
Oh, yes, you did. and we sort of established our best practices, because this framework is big and complicated, and we can talk more about it, but you can go in there and make a huge mess if you don't.
Right.
So yeah. We sort of, you know, documented our best practices and started training people. We started hiring a lot of people right out of university with their computer science degrees, and we would train them for 6 months or a year. We still do before they're even billable, you know?
Right. That's amazing. I think that's awesome. And how many hours have you contributed to the,
it's really is like pushing 100,000. It's like probably 80, 85 or something at this point.
1,000 hours.
Yeah. And that's,
so you've contributed back to the, you've paid that open source early days help that you got, you've paid that forward pretty significantly.
We've done our best. Yeah. It's we call it a community service day often.
Yep.
And we've done it kind of differently over periods of time. Sometimes we've had a team of 10 people just sitting there cranking on the open source project for no money, you know, just to make it better. And sometimes we've had a team of 3 people doing that. And sometimes or for a period of time, one of my favorites was like one day a month. We, at this point, we'd grown the company to about 100 people. And so at one day a month, we would have everyone come in on a Saturday and do a community service. And we would, you know, cook the food and make it a fun day hanging out of the office. But you'd have, you know, 50 or 80 people in there working all day. And all it was about was like squashing bugs and filing tickets and improving the open source project. And we still do that really actively. So,
yeah.
The community angle on open source, and Apache is just all about community. They're, you know, tagline is community over code.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm a total believer. They have, it's all about the community interacting and cooperating that makes these things better. So we've tried to do our part, especially with OFBiz, but across a few other projects as well.
Well, you know, just for people who might not be as into it as you and me by association, what is the benefit of open source? Like, what are maybe the top 3 things that somebody who's an entrepreneur or who's a leader at a large corporation or whatever, like, what would you say, or what's a good mental overlay and a few important pieces about open source software in particular?
Yeah, sure. Well, so a couple of things jump to mind, and, The first is that it makes me think of blockchain. You know how blockchain is sort of secure because it's transparent.
Right.
So you have ledgers everywhere and nobody can fake the ledger because they're distributed everywhere and everyone can see everything, right?
Yeah.
And open source is the same. It's in the sense that, hey, the code base is freely available. Everyone can go look at it. If there's an issue, there's no problem. You can get your hands on it and fix it or see it or look for it. So there's no real way to, you know, sneak something screwy in there and then have it last. Now, sometimes there are mistakes, log4j.
Right.
But you know, you can't purposefully screw it up and then keep it secret, you know, because everyone else can see it. So it's that transparency that you know, makes it more secure and just generally better because it's open to everyone who wants to see it and contribute to it. The other thing is that the profit motive is like put in the back seat. Like you have to kind of think about what you want to do to make money with it. But you ultimately, it requires at least some bit of like labor of love if you want to deal with it, you know?
Right.
And so it's a little bit different from building something all proprietary in the back room and nobody can see it. And it, you know, you're it's like there's it's not like a conflict of interest, but maybe it is, but it's like, and by the way, we've built proprietary stuff too. So I'm not like a fanatic, but the cool thing about open source is that it's there for everyone to kind of see and share. And really back to Apache's thing, community over code, you know, some new person from, you know, Germany or whatever can come into the project and start going through it and find something wrong with it and fix it. Yeah. There's just no secret. So yeah. I think that's about it.
And with open source, if you've got an open source solution, then you're not stuck with one vendor, right? Like if the people doing your stuff aren't doing it great, there's other people who know how to do it and it's obvious and it's open and it's not locked in the back room and only available from one person.
Absolutely. Yeah. The vendor lock situation is a really important point because if you have a proprietary framework like that, then, you know, even if you have a universe of service providers around it and certified partners and whatever, you're still locked to that one company.
Yeah.
So at some point, one company can make or break it. Whereas here, everybody can grab the code, anybody can service it or build on it or do whatever. So that flexibility and freedom is great for businesses, and I think that's been pretty clearly established now. So I think that's a big one. The lack of a vendor lock for sure.
So what comes to your mind if I can switch us over to like some other stuff from your business and entrepreneurial past, what's something that comes to mind when I say leadership and communication? Like who did you ever have a mentor? Did you ever have an experience? Like what comes to mind when I say that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at risk of sounding corny, it's completely true. Like I think of our dad.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and he has been on the podcast. If you want to hear him yourself, you can go search for John F. Bates at speaklikealeader.show and you can make up your own mind. But I think, I would not dispute you in the least, Mike.
Yeah. Well, and especially in those early days when it was, you know, time to file the business entity, he was completely helpful. And then it was kind of like, now what? And I mean, I can't tell you how many times I called him. Like, I don't know how much like free legal and tax advice he gave me and how much like just moral support he gave me. And I can remember like he was busy at the time. He was in his office drinking. Yeah. And when I would call, like I would call him in the middle of the day and he would pick up the phone and I'd be like, hey dad, I got a quick question. Do you have a second? And he would say like, always for you, son, hold on a minute. And he'd go like clear out the office and close the door. And then he's like, what's going on? You know? And it could be just like, you know, oh, I just wrote this guy a check who's a contractor and I'm not sure how the taxes work or something, just basic. And he would the door, clear out the office and sit there and talk to me about it until I understood it, you know?
Yeah.
And with all of our contract, whether it's like with clients or employment agreements or anything, he was there to like work those through with me. I mean, it like a master class from an attorney, like until he was comfortable that his pupil understood, you know?
And yeah.
He was super committed. And on that line, he was always like, look, a good agreement is an agreement that's good for both parties.
Yes.
And that's that's the kernel of leadership in my mind is that it's certainly not about tricking anybody or it's certainly not about getting over on anybody. It's quite to the contrary about creating a space that's good for all parties involved. Everyone has to want to be there. Everyone has to have a clear picture of the benefit that they get from being there for themselves and a feeling of benefiting the group. He just kind of taught me that from the beginning as he helped me kind of cobble together my understanding of what it even meant to start a company and run it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's fabulous. I have a similar experience, you know, how it was really, it has been and still is really nice to have, you know, what some people have told me is the best. He told me he's the best contract attorney in Utah. You know, he's retired now, but.
No, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I've gone through so many contracts with him. Yeah. He's like such a badass. And he got me to the point where like now I read a contract and I guess I probably read it like he taught me to read it.
Yeah, and yeah.
About it, how he taught me to feel about it, you know? And if it's unfair, never mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would agree. Like the guy is, you know, he does know contracts like backwards and forwards and sideways. And the fun part is like, he has anecdotes about the most random stuff that comes up, you know?
Yeah.
The time I was selling a DC-10 or I was, you know, or one time I was dealing with a property in the Watergate or whatever, or I was in Russia being threatened by these people that, you know, violence, or I was in this country doing that.
Yeah.
He has like real life experience with all of the things that come up, which just really makes it like a total entertaining joy to work with him on that stuff.
Well, and you know, that's, I think, one of the places that I see this quote that I tell people all the time is, you know, never tell a story without a point and never make a point without a story. And I do think that Dad has a great ability to just come up with some story out of his past that really makes the point that he's trying to illustrate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you know, an officer in the Marine Corps saw, you know, action in Vietnam.
Yeah.
His career all the way through his corporate work and everything else. I mean, he's seen a lot and he's seen people in really hard situations and watched how they could work with it. And sometimes they blew it and sometimes they nailed it. And he's, you know, it's invaluable to get that experience shared by him. I mean, he's really generous and he's smart about how he does it. So yeah, he's totally my hero.
Yeah, totally. Me too. I remember when I was young, I think I was in, you know, I don't know, early high school, maybe something. He said, you know, son, be good to the people you see on your way up because they're the same people you're going to see on your way down. You're going to see them on your way up again. And you'll just always be happy if you're good to people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that almost makes me cry because I thought about that. I would hear that, you know, I would hear that a lot throughout my life, just him telling me that and get present to it again and try to live up to that, you know?
Yeah, I think I hear you so much. And it's like, you know, look, and it's not easy. And, you know, I've fired a lot of people and I've hired a lot of people and I've been in conflict with a lot of people and hell, I've sued a couple of people. And, you know, so it's not like it's always all perfect and dreamy, but you know, I still think that, you know, for example, there's a guy who works for us now who I had to let go at one point. And it was really sad. And it was like right before Christmas and he had a new baby and I had to let him go. And when he left my office, I cried, you know, like I felt like the shittiest.
I remember, Mike, I remember that.
I felt so bad, you know, and I didn't, it's like, I didn't have anything else I could do. You know, I had to let go of a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
And it made me feel so awful, but I tried to do it like honestly and clearly and help him, you know, at least see that I really appreciated him and it was really not something I wanted to do. And I valued him and he was a great dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, a year or two later, I called him back and I was like, hey, you know, business is back. We need that position. Would you come work with us again? And he was like, I'll see you. I'll be right there. I have to give me 2 weeks notice and I'll be right there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think there's just no question. Everybody should be as nice as they can be.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just more fun, right?
Yeah. It's way more fun. Way more fun.
So any other anecdotes from him or any other people that influenced you in the realm of leadership and communication and things?
Well, I mean, you know, there are a lot along the way. You know, I have some really good friends who have had similar career paths. I have you as an obvious example. So there are a lot of people along the way, but you know, nobody stands out quite as much as Dad. So
yeah, good. Well, so what do you notice that, you know, because you've got this kind of global perspective, at least you've got a binational perspective between the United States and all the people that you have in India. What are some of the little things that you've noticed? Because like you've been working in this distributed virtual world since freaking almost day one of your career. You've got an enormous number of people now in India. You've got other people in Italy and other places in the world. What are some of the things, is there any things that you think that you've figured out just because you had to and you've been doing this for so long that might be useful to people that are listening that have come into this in the last 2 years?
From a global perspective, I was really lucky to go to that school in Monterey. It was like a third of the student body was from other countries. Everybody who went there had to have a foreign language. And of course, our mother is from Germany, you know, yep. Came here when she was 19 or whatever. So we traveled a lot as kids. I kind of had a head start in terms of a global perspective. It just seemed like the natural perspective.
Yeah.
I kind of came out of school with a degree that was, I mean, I was trying to go there to study about how to do international business.
Right.
And so
the Monterey Institute of International Studies, and you got your MBA there in international business, right?
Yeah, that's right. And my undergrad in foreign policy.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I like that stuff. And it was a real treat. I mean, it was like a dream come true, really, to be able to go out and start doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And I worked with some other folks like in Eastern Europe and South America and stuff along the way. But where it really all came together was with regard to this Indian office that we've set up and grown.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I talk about those, I use the cave metaphor, and like how many times did we hit our heads, you know, in that cave?
Right.
We finally figured out how it was laid out and how many, you know, how many nights at 3 a.m. was I working at my dining room table while my family was asleep, and I was like on a long phone call with someone in France and someone in India or whatever.
Right.
Like a lot. So, I mean, I don't know what I could really offer in the way of specific advice, but I would say, you know, being curious and having an open mind about how people do things differently and then how they map onto kind of the same things underneath is really interesting. Something even so trivial as like a business entity type. We'll get a client from some other country and there'll be, you know, this, you know, there'll be such and such private limited or whatever.
Right.
And then you're like, hey, what is that? Like, how does it compare to the ones that I know? You know, is it like a corporation or is it like an S corp or is it like an LLC or what is it? You know?
Yeah.
So I've always been curious about that, and it's fun for me to go learn about it. So, you know, similarly, the sort of cultural value orientations and the tendencies at a cultural level are really, really fun to figure out and to go, you know, drink chai in India or go, do your thing wherever to try to get yourself kind of immersed and participating in those other cultures makes it really a lot less scary than I think it might be for people. I know people sometimes are intimidated and scared about that, but if it's more of like an adventure, you want to go check it out. And it's like, oh yeah, what do we do now? We stop everything and go get a chai. Like, oh cool.
Yeah,
or, you know, it's like pursuing an adventure with an open mind is how it really has been for me. And it's been a blast. I mean, visiting clients or working with, employees in different countries around the world is like my favorite part of this whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think sometimes, like, what if it was just, you know, what if it were just, you know, what if we were in, you know, Akron, Ohio, and everybody lived like a few miles from the office and we were just doing our thing and that was that? Like, honestly, that's way less interesting to me, you know? And it's not about a business model. It's not about cost savings or anything. Yep. It's just a lot more interesting to me to go, whoa, we have this eclectic group. We have, you know, like we're someone at Hot Wax is always awake, you know, because
yeah. We're the sun never sets, Mike.
Exactly. So to be able to kind of get, and I do just want to tie that to open source because that's the nature of it. Yeah. And I think that's the reason that we are how we are. Is just because it's like a global meritocracy. So whoever's around and participating counts. And then, you know, it might be their morning in the middle of your night and you want to talk to them. So get up, you know?
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Worth the 3 a.m. calls to be able to be tuned into the whole world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And sometimes I call them at their 3 a.m. too. So it kind of pushes that traditional model of like a 9-to-5, everyone's like homogenous. We all live within a 3-mile radius. Like, it's not that at all.
Yeah.
It's like a global problem solving puzzle. That's just fascinating. And it's whether it's the business practices or, you know, visiting somewhere and going to see the tigers or whatever, you know, it's just a completely, you know, it's a completely wild, super fun kind of global puzzle that I think if you approach it with open-mindedness is just a blast. You know, there's nothing to be scared of. And you see in the end, all the commonality that underlies all the little decorations that are on top of them, you know?
Right.
So as you learn the little patterns of decorations, you get to that common foundation underneath where you're like, oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we do it this way in the US. I think they do it that way in Italy. And then they do it this way in Germany and this way in wherever. But a lot of these fundamental concepts are all the same.
Same thing. Yeah. Yeah.
It is a really like a Benetton moment where we're just, you know, we're all one people, you know?
Yeah. So do you guys do anything at Hot Wax like API, assume positive intent? Like, do you have any rules? Like, if you're starting to get cranky, stop texting and pick up the phone. Like, is there anything like that? Or
when you say API, I'm like, yeah, we're just writing a whole bunch of APIs right now.
Yeah, of course. I meant assume positive intent.
So the company has sort of morphed a lot over the years. And I think a lot of those kind of tactical methods change. But the strategy is the same, where we want to keep everyone feeling like they're part of the team. And we want to have sort of, you know, at the very least, a baseline established of being really nice and helpful to each other.
Right? Yeah.
So there's no like, no prima donnas, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And if there is, you know, I take her over to the side of the stage and I'm like, gosh, your voice is amazing. If you can just try to use it in a helpful way, we would.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Cause we have like super hot shots and that's great.
Yeah.
But there's like a team vibe of, you know, it's more than civility. It's like, especially in the indoor office, it's just a straight up family model.
Right.
So, like I was mentioning those community service days, you know, one team would be assigned to come in and cook for everybody else. And they loved it. You know, like they were like, oh, we have a kitchen on the roof. And there's an open roof with a kitchen and a dining area. And they would go up there and set up and cook all this great food for everybody and just delight in serving their fellow Hot Wax folks.
Yeah.
And And so that kind of family model and that supportive model, and in our Salt Lake office now, it's like these are some of my best friends, you know, really.
Yeah.
We are really, it is really familial. I can't think of any sort of easily recitable phrases that we turn to remind people what to do, but we do make it super clear. Like if someone is being an ass, we tell them like, you're being an ass and here's what you should do instead.
Yeah.
And that works, you know, and, and so that's kind of the way we go at it, is it's case by case. And it's also sort of phase by phase in terms of the broader company. We adjust the tactics, but the main thing is to keep everybody like on a team contributing together toward the same goal, you know?
Yeah. And kind of present to being on the team.
Yeah. Oh, feeling valued to be on the team. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think that's a lot of it. You know, if you make the effort to say, we have this team and you're on it, well, you really need to make sure you say, and we're so glad you're on it.
Yeah.
And your contribution is unique and super valuable. And thank you for being here. We appreciate it. And by the way, like anything that I'll ask you to do, you could ask me to do. So if I'm going to call you at 3 a.m. and wake you up, you bet you can call me at 3 a.m. and wake me up. You know, that's a fair deal. So
That one loops us back to Dad, because I remember him telling me that, you know, even though, cause he was the commander, right, of the platoon, I guess, that he had there with his 6 Ontoses and dudes and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
So he couldn't go. He couldn't go crawl the perimeter and double check that wasn't his job. Right. But he said, you know, I made really darn sure that I never, ever asked any of my men to do anything that I wasn't willing to do myself.
Yeah, totally.
And I thought that always really stuck with me too.
I think that's really good advice. And I think that if you set that vibe up, it really does, go viral in your team, you know, everybody gets it. And there's definitely no like stuffy hierarchy happening. It's about, it's like, we're all human beings. We all have, you know, families and lifestyles and whatever that we're trying to support. And we're stoked that we're on this team with these great people. And we know if there's a problem, we'll go to them and talk to them and be straight with each other. And yeah, you bet. If I'm going to ask you to do something, then I would do it myself. Like if I were able. Sometimes I'm not technically able, but I will really. And a lot of that was that, you know, what I was doing at 3 a.m. for all those years was like sitting there with people who were doing stuff that I couldn't do, like giving them guidance to whatever degree I could and moral support. Like, why you're doing this, you know, this part probably isn't that important, but if you focus on that part, it would be great. And if you're going to be sitting up all night programming on something, I'm going to sit up all night with you on the phone, talk to you, you know?
Yeah. 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 I mean, dude, that definitely can make an enormous difference. I know people have done that for me.
Yeah.
Well, so is there anything that I didn't ask you about that I ought to ask you about?
Let's see. I mean, I think that's a pretty good once through. Let's see. The only other thing I was going to say earlier, but the conversation moved on when you were asking me about other leaders who have inspired me or taught me. Yeah. I had a stint where I worked at a corporate company, and I was like a product development leader. And I was, Hot Wax was still running at the same time, right?
I think I might have been helping you in the background badly.
Oh, really? Oh, maybe.
I would, you know, answer a couple of emails a week, and I don't think I did a very good job.
I remember that. Well, don't feel bad at all. So anyway, it was good. We kept the company rolling, and I got to take this opportunity to go get this corporate experience. And although, you know, I have some, it was kind of a shitty corporate experience like I might have expected.
Yeah.
There were, you know, people backstabbing and climbing and fighting for power and doing whatever.
That actually happens?
I know. Who knew? Right? It was fascinating to go to the zoo and watch it up close.
Yeah.
But I also did learn a lot of actual like brass tacks. Like there is a spreadsheet that I still use a lot that came out of that stint. There was like, look, if you're, and I was lucky enough to have the CEO, at least for a while, was sort of trying to, I don't know, he was mentoring me, maybe he's however you want to say it, but he shared a lot of straight information with me. And it was a company that was about the size that mine is now. Uh-huh. And so I was able to just kind of look through his eyes and see like, well, what's it like? I think there were 90 people. So what's it like to run a company with 90 people? Like, how do you keep track of everything? You know?
Yeah.
It's important. And although I came out of that with some bumps and bruises and a little bit of bitterness, really, I wouldn't trade it. I mean, it was awesome. And I learned a lot from that whole executive team. You know, setting all the political wrangling aside, I learned operationally how to run a business like that, you know, and what KPIs they were tracking and how they would turn this one up and what to do if that was happening. And so I learned a lot from that. And I remember earlier on, Dad used to always say, well, you know, get a job. If you need to get a job at IBM or something, you could do that. You know, that's not going to hurt your resume or whatever. You don't have to stay there. And I, you know, clacked my tongue ring with my blue hair, I was like, that's not happening, right? But eventually I did have that chance to go dip into corporate land for a minute.
Yep.
And it was super insightful because setting all the political bullshit aside, just taking a look at the machinery and seeing how all the pieces fit together and where all the knobs were was really, really useful. So I guess my point is, you know, don't be afraid of trying something that seems like it might be out of your lane, because you might just find some really valuable information along the way, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. Well, and I know that, you know, we've got a lot of entrepreneurs. We also have a lot of people in big corporations listening. And I think that this has been a nice cross-section of stuff for everybody. I really appreciate you joining me, Mikey.
Hey man, it was really my honor to be here, and I hope it's in support of your audience, and certainly it's in support of you. I love that you're doing this, and I'm just honored that you asked me on. So thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome, and shout out to Matt Nesburn, because I know he's going to be listening to this one with particular attention.
You're so right, Nesburn.
And thank you to all of you who listen. I just really, really appreciate it. And I do my best to bring you valuable guests with things that matter. And if you've got people that you want to suggest, if you ever want to reach out and let me know what you think of the show, any of that stuff, I'm john@johnbates.com now. You can send it to john@executivespeakingsuccess or john@johnbates.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your feedback, anything you don't like, anything you do like. And again, Mike Bates, good job, buddy. Like, you know, I that must have been 1994 or 1995 when you came down with hair down to your back and, like, you know, rocked out with me in Santa Monica there. And then look what you did. I'm really proud of you.
Well, thanks, man. That means a lot to me. I mentioned earlier, your role is just instrumental. So I feel just kind of lucky, but thanks.
Yeah, well, I think we both are.
Right on.
All right. And thank you for joining us. We appreciate having you here on SpeakLikeALeader.show. And I will see you next time.
Thank you for joining the Speak Like a Leader podcast. Go be awesome.